You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Sure, powerful music there. I bowed on my knees and cried holy. That was the Heritage Singers with a beautiful piece, leading us into our next conversation. We are connecting with Hanley van der Westhuizen from the Vista Clinic, speaking to us about psychosis. And today we're speaking about the common triggers and risk factors. Now, psychosis doesn't appear out of nowhere. It has roots, sometimes genetic, sometimes environmental, and often misunderstood. And so we're going to dig into what can lead someone down this path and what we should be on the lookout for. Hanley, good morning once again, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bongi. Thanks for welcoming me.
Thank you so much for joining us once again for another conversation on this condition. What would you say are the most common risk factors linked to psychosis?
There are several risk factors that can increase the likelihood of developing psychosis, but the most common ones include genetic factors, and those are issues like family history. Having a first-degree relative, like a parent or sibling, with psychosis or a related disorder can increase your risk. There is the genetic predisposition theory, which look at gene variations and look at polygenic risk scores that are associated with higher vulnerability. So those are the genetic factors. Then obviously also environmental factors. Like we already mentioned, childhood trauma and abuse, it can really increase susceptibility. Mm-hmm. Interesting, there are international research indicating growing up in a densely populated urban area has been linked to higher risk compared to rural environments, which is good news for South Africa, but I'm a little bit guarded in terms of applying that research directly to South African population. Mm-hmm. Perinatal factors, those include, complications during pregnancy or birth, like hypoxia at birth or infections. There are a lot of opportunistic infections that, influence the central nervous system. Then there's the psychosocial stresses, high-stress life events like bereavement, relationship breakdowns, or financial crises. And then also very important, social isolation. If somebody, are in lack of social support or are experiencing social adversity of any kind, that can really contribute. Another very high risk factor is substance use. Cannabis in mainly and especially during adolescence, when a person is young, is strongly associated with increased risk. And then also the other drugs, the psychedelics, all those can also contribute. Neurodevelopmental factors, delays or abnormalities in brain development during childhood, low birth weight or a premature birth, those are also associated with increased risk. And then there are strong biological factors, like neurochemical imbalances, especially when we talked about on Monday about the influence of dopamine. If there is any kind of a dysregulation of dopamine pathways, that would be implicated in psychosis. Mm-hmm. And then the structural brain abnormalities, like the variations in brain structure, for example, maybe enlarged ventricles or reduced gray matter volume. All those factors we associate with a larger risk, right, to develop psychosis.
Mm-hmm. And what role would you say trauma or stress might play in triggering psychotic episodes?
Yeah, no, definitely. Trauma and stress can indeed trigger psychotic episodes. We've got a very known model, which we call the stress vulnerability model, which is identified as a trigger for psychosis. And I usually use a metaphor to explain this model. If you think of a bullet in the chamber of a revolver, if you have that picture in your mind right now, okay, the bullet will be all those vulnerabilities that we've mentioned just previously now. Mm-hmm. All those vulnerabilities, yeah, are or metaphorically the bullet that is lying in the chamber of this revolver. And you can actually go through your life if you take very, very good care and you are lucky enough not to have stress or trauma in your life, then you can possibly go through life without a psychosis being triggered. But the trigger event is that finger going around the trigger and pulling that trigger mm-hmm. and allowing that bullet to go through the chamber and basically triggering all those risk factors at play and causing a perfect storm to have the psychotic episode then happening.
So can you have psychosis and not have a psychotic episode?
Meaning a psychotic episode, underlying psychosis? I'm not sure what you're asking.
So I'm thinking about psychosis as you have all those underlying conditions that you mentioned, and you have this condition, you have the, what's the word?
The vulnerability.
The vulnerability.
The vulnerability.
Yes.
Yes.
But you,
yes.
You don't actually act out on it, or I don't know how to word it. Is that possible?
There's never a psychotic episode. There's never what we can say direct symptoms noticeable.
Yes.
It can happen. It can definitely happen if one is as lucky not to have any trauma or stress trigger. Or then, there's a specific psychosis which is, the more serious one, the schizophrenia. Which can sometimes be triggered without any trauma events.
Sure.
It's our primary psychotic disorders or our idiopathic psychosis that can happen without any trigger. But those are lesser in prevalence than the other disorders.
Okay. I get you. And how does family history play into risk? You talked already about the genetic factors.
Yeah. Well, family history is widely accepted as the most important genetic and environmental risk factor. And it's interesting that I say environmental risk factor as well. And the reason for that is that families share environments. So factors like socioeconomic status, mm-hmm. parenting styles, or exposure to stresses, families share those things, and that is why, it is so widely recognized that is the most important risk factor. It influences risk of psychosis mostly in the genetic vulnerability arena, because our research indicates that, if you have a sibling or parent with schizophrenia, your lifetime risk is approximately 10%, and that is compared to about 1% in the general population. So there is a rather statistical increase when you have a family member, and that relates to the genetic vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what role does substance use have in triggering psychosis?
I just would like to come back just to emphasize the family why it's so important. If you look at your twin studies, mm-hmm. You find that there's a 48 or 50% concordance rate for schizophrenia. If you look at the non-identical twin studies, it's like 17%. Okay. So this indicates a strong genetic component. And even in the adoption studies, where you take people out of the shared family social environment, there's still even a higher risk, apart from being affected with stresses. Okay, now coming back to that question that you had about the substance, that is really a well-established risk factor, mm-hmm. and not only of triggering psychosis, but also triggering a relapse of a treated psychosis. So a person can be treated and have good management and regulation of symptoms, but when they then use a substance again, it can trigger a relapse. And the most strongly linked substance in this regard is cannabis or marijuana, or what we call dacha or weed commonly.
Yeah.
That is very much associated, and particularly I hope potency strains that has the most robust evidence linking it to psychosis. And what is concerning about this is, you know, when kids buy cannabis off the street, they don't really have an idea of what strains they are buying, and they can very easily get a very high potency strain, and it can trigger then the psychosis. So if you use psychosis, your risk is approximately 2 to 3 times higher.
Oh, wow.
than the normal population, so it's very, very high.
Sure. And can psychosis occur without any obvious trigger?
Yeah, it can. It can. That is what we said in terms of the primary psychotic disorders or the idiopathic psychosis, that with schizophrenia being the most well-known example. Now, the key points in this is that these conditions, they result from a very complex interplay of genetic, neurobiological and environmental factors accumulated over time. And the onset can be gradual or sudden, but usually there is no single identifiable external cause. And that is very important to hear, that no single identifiable external cause. And with these, the genetic predisposition play the central role. Although early life stress or subtle environmental influence may contribute, they are not always obvious at the time of the onset.
Okay. All right. And in closing, what would you say we can do? What can people do in order to, if it's even possible, to avoid any of those triggers? Any final words that you'd like to share about how maybe we can try to avoid those?
I'm going to use a less, academic analogy. What I often use in my consultation room, and as I say to people, that we are all metaphorically born with a hand of cards, and in this hand of cards, we've got good cards and we've got bad cards. And we have nothing to do with the good cards. You know, if you are born very intelligent or you are gifted with good looks, or you are socially very, easily adaptable, you've got nothing to do with those good qualities that you are born with. And equally, the bad cards that you are born with. So you can potentially be born in a rural area where you haven't got good access to mental health services, where the mental health services in your area is already overburdened. You can potentially be born into a family where a first degree relative is suffering from schizophrenia, which are two really bad cards in your hand. But you can be born with intelligence, and then that is so important then for you to play the best hand that you can in your lifespan, and that will translate to me to take very good care of your mind and mood. I won't use drugs. If I see that there's mind or mood fluctuations, I would seek help early. When I refer to this individual born in a rural area, I would foster an alliance with my sister clinic. I will make sure that she knows me, and that she is aware of all the risk factors in my family. And if there is problems, I can speak with her, and hopefully she can direct me to a proper referral base, and I can get easy access to mental health services. I will also say, take very, very good care of your education and independent living. These are very serious aspects in the individual's life. If you've got a good education and you're able to live independently, those are important route markers in your life journey and can help significantly. If you are at all, diagnosed with a mental health disorder like psychosis, or you have the risk factors and you want to make sure that it doesn't get triggered, I mean, obviously, we are very worried about trauma and stresses. You know, even in the world that we are worried about all those children that are in war zones and experiencing extreme stress and extreme triggers that can really trigger psychosis. But we can do what we can, and for that, I would say, play the best hand that you can with the cards that you have.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Hanley, thank you so much for coming through once again, and look forward to connecting with you again in the future as we continue on with this conversation. God bless you.
God bless. Bongi, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.